putting this disclaimer out there before I start the show. This entire podcast on my end accidentally recorded with my laptop microphone instead of my podcast microphone. So you're not going to be hearing the best sound quality from me. My guest host and I did have some great conversation, but hopefully you guys can deal with the quality, and I will make sure in the future to double check and triple check to make sure that this doesn't happen. But thanks for rocking with me, and hope you enjoy the conversation.
Hey, what's going on? Welcome to King of the Mountain Podcast. I am your host, BQ, and I'm joined today by Terrence. Terrence from Southeast. If you've been rocking with the KOTM podcast from like day one, the YouTube days, you may have seen Terrence hop on the show with Will and myself at one point. What's up, Terrence, man? I guess I just broke the news to you about the Global Force thing. You actually didn't know about it.
Yeah, I didn't know about it yet. You know, sort of a shocker. It's not a shocker to me because I pretty much called that when they first did the announcement of the merger. So it's not really a shocker, but it's something that I saw coming, and let's just take note of it.
I, honest to God, did not see that coming. I really didn't. And I actually feel really ridiculous about it because, come to think about it, in the last 3 months or whatever it's been, they have said, okay, we're rebranding as Impact Wrestling, but at no point did that legally happen. So it actually makes perfect sense, come to think about it.
Yeah, I mean, when you looked at it, you know, with the color scheme, Jeff Jarrett coming in, them buying, you know, Global Force being merged with Impact, you sort of saw that handwriting on the wall that eventually they wanted to have their own brand name, and their brand name was going to be Global Force.
So for you, do you care? Does it as a fan, does it bother you in any way? Do you like it, dislike it? Because there's a lot of people right now on Twitter that like really genuinely pissed off.
Well, I think you got to look at the bigger thing. So I'm not upset about it. I think it gives them a, you know, sort of like WWE, and they got Raw and they got SmackDown. So it's Global Force Wrestling and Impact is the show. You can't have, you know, everything been called Impact. It's Impact Wrestling. The show is Impact. So it gives them an identity. It breaks them away from the TNA past sort of. You know, they still have the, you know, the tape library and everything else. But it just gives them a new identity. It sort of gives them a fresh start. And, you know, with any name change of anything, you know, WWE, they was WWF at one time. They changed and put the E in. So it's sort of like that. It's just a change people will get used to over time.
So from all the times that you and I have interacted on Twitter, we've been pretty much in agreement with everything. So in your opinion, did you think the TNA name needed to go?
You know what? I'm sort of conflicted on that because I didn't have a problem with it. I thought the name was catchy. I thought in the early, you know, infancy of TNA, they stood for total nonstop action, what they delivered. And when they brought in the other stars, it sort of watered it down a little bit when the only thing they wanted was WWE retreads. But, you know, I had no problem with the TNA name. I thought they should have probably kept it. They already phased it out, but I just always thought the brand should have just stayed total nonstop action wrestling because, you know, look at the alumni that they have. You know, AJ Styles, Samoa Joe. You know, CM Punk had a cup of coffee there. I mean, the names go on and on. So it's sort of like, you know, moving a football team like, you know, the Baltimore Colts to Indianapolis. Now they're in Indianapolis Colts. So, you know, but at the end of the day, you know, everybody gets used to a name change, a new location, a new venue. So, you know, people be upset now, and then 6 months from now, nobody talk about it.
Right. You're a sports guy like myself, and I remember when I was younger and the Washington Bullets changed their name to the Wizards, and, you know, those fans were pretty much in uproar over that. But fast forward here, I mean, I would imagine it's been about 20 years since that name change, but no one.
Well, you know, I'm here in Washington, so, you know, I know that personally.
Are you? You're right. That's funny because I was just throwing a random team out there, which is kind of funny. So so maybe you're going to disprove my point, but. But do you feel like, I mean, that's like a thing of the past, the whole, oh, we should be called the Bullets? I mean, is that people like accepted the Wizards name?
No, not even. No. They never.
It's a bad example.
They never accepted. Well, it's a bad example because it's an awful name, Wizard. So, you know, but you know, you go to other, you know, you, other sports, you know, the Raiders were Oakland and then LA and then back to Oakland. Now they're going to be Vegas, but they're still the Raiders. And with TNA or Global Force or Anthem, it's still Impact, and you still got the memories. You know, everybody's going to hate or bash anything they do, whether it be the fans or non-fans or just internet trolls. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's about the in-ring product and what they're doing right now. And I think, you know, if you look at everything they have been doing, everything has been positive sort of that they've been doing. So we just can't complain about something that pretty much was going to happen when the merger happened. And, you know, I saw that right down the middle and nobody believed it. But people get used to it, just like we get used to everything else.
I totally agree with you. It's going to be a little difficult to say the name for it to come off the tongue, because when it was when it went from TNA to Impact, I was constantly, you know, doing the podcast or talking to people like TNA, Impact. And now I got to say, I mean, Global Force Wrestling, GFW. So it's whatever. I do hope that they have brand new titles. And I think the GFW titles are gorgeous. I've said that many times, but I do hope it's, I do hope they have new titles. I think that would help the cause quite a bit. And Dutch said there was new titles. Sienna had said that she made the comment when Gail Kim hands me that shiny new title, you know, because she's awarding the title to the winner. So I think that pretty much gives it away. I think it's going to be new titles, but it's an adjustment period. And like you said, months down the line, I don't think we're going to care. We'll get used to it. Maybe the crowd will start chanting GFW, kind of like they used to do the TNA thing.
Yeah, I miss those days.
Yeah, so I know you're a Bellator fan, so are you pretty excited about King Mo in the corner of Lashley? Do you think that's pretty cool?
Well, I'll give you a note on that. Me and King Mo's pretty good friends, so very excited about it. Awesome guy. You know, he had a cup of coffee with TNA when he first came to Bellator. Things didn't work out. He still is training in wrestling. He, you know, that's what he wanted to do, you know, when his fighting career is over. I think when you look at that, you got to pull the layers back on all this. Now, as you know, Bellator's big pay-per-view was last week. Jeff and Karen and Borash was there. They're good friends with Chael Sonnen, but it's always good to show up at an event on a network that you used to be on that you want to be back on. And, you know, open up the door, have King Mo, you know, at the, you know, at Slam 15. You got a sponsorship now with Future Legend, who has sponsored Bellator fights before. They got relationship with Chael Sonnen from the GFW. So it's a lot of little things working here. And also the Spike TV president of the sports department of over there. Spike was at a TNA show months ago, you know, when they did tapings in Orlando, like a few months back. So you start to connect these dots and you see Jeff trying to work these relationships. And not saying it will happen, but as long as they greasing the palm and sort of opening the door, showing being at Bellator events, having King Mo there, you know, constantly talking, keeping that door open. And then they got the Spike relationship over the UK. It can't hurt. And also, if you look at other things going on over there at Spike, they've been rebranded to Paramount. They no longer have the Glory Kickboxing. They no longer have the PBC, Premier Championship Boxing. So you look at that, it's a void over there from when they had that Friday night lights out lineup they was doing every Friday. That void is there. And it's a perfect time for TNA to try to stay consistent, keep that relationship door open, and try to get back on Spike. So having King Mo at this event, being at their event, it only helps. It only helps as far as that relationship of them trying to get back over there on Spike.
What do you think? I'm a very casual MMA fan. I like Bellator a lot, actually, but a very casual fan. I know you're the MMA guy. So I made a prediction on my prediction show that King Mo would accidentally, maybe purposely, but I'm going to assume accidentally, cost Lashley the match. Do you think there's any possibility that that could happen and actually set up like a cross promotional, you know, like a fight in Impact Wrestling or a fight in Bellator? Do you think there's any possibility of that?
Well, as you've seen before, they've done that before over there with the Tito Ortiz and Rampage Jackson. So they've done it before. So it's not out of the realm of possibility of them doing this. Like I said, I think the door is open for anything right now. I think that they need that extra push because Bellator is trying to go to that extra level. So I wouldn't say that could possibly happen, even though I haven't heard that it would happen. So if I do find out something from Mo later on, I'll let you know. But, I mean, it would be interesting, but Mo's going to fight Ryan Bader at the end of the year, and Lashley is going to fight in the heavyweight tournament, the finals of the heavyweight tournament. So I think he's going to fight Matt Mitrione probably at the end of the year for the title. So, but, I mean, that's something that if they did have a working relationship again, you will start to see that if they did return the Spike, because they did it before. They were great partners. And if something like that did happen, then I would say they may be back on Spike on 2018 if King Mo calls Lashley the belt, because that will open up the door to say they're getting ready to go back to Spike in 2018.
I agree with you. I do not think they will be on Pop next year. Regardless of where they end up, there's no way they'll be on Pop. I actually trust Jeff Jarrett because he's delivered in everything so far. He's hit the ground running, and he's done a lot so far. There's nothing so far on the surface that he has appeared to fail at accomplishing. I mean, he got the UK deal, and you know, considering their viewership, the viewership for this show was 268,000. They took a hit on this one. There was definitely a dip after having such a high viewership last week.
Yes.
But you know, in all honesty, it is on Pop TV, which a lot of people do get Pop TV, but it's the target audience is not for Impact Wrestling. And that does matter, because there's no way you're going to get casuals and stuff when you've got Young and the Restless on beforehand and everything. But I don't know. I can't help but to think if they got onto a bigger network like Spike or something, that I don't see why they couldn't do 500,000 viewers on a bigger – I mean, they hit almost – from what Pop TV president said, when it comes to DVR numbers, they hit almost half a million that way. So I don't know. I can't help but to think they would hit 500,000 live viewers, but then people always say no one watches the show. So
yeah, I mean, you gotta look at the people that are saying that. You look at the reaction that all the former Impact stars get when they go to WWE. So these people that are not watching, they're consuming it by YouTube. They're consuming it by some other means, you know, going over their buddy house, by their phone, on the internet. So they know what these stars are doing. And then you see people now, they're campaigning for Rosemary to go to the WWE. So they are consuming it. It's just that they're not, you know, wanting to get Pop TV because it's on their higher platform tier. But I really think if they were on another network, and just go back to, you know, when the Hardys got hot with the broken gimmick. So just say if all of a sudden that deal ended last year and November they got on Spike, wouldn't you think their numbers would have been, you know, 600,000, 700,000, 800,000, maybe more on a Thursday night with no wrestling competition, and you got the hottest acting wrestling, what they were doing? So I think it's just the fact that they just don't have the penetration on that network. I think once they get to a bigger media outlet, you know, whether it's Spike, I don't think it'll be Turner. I think it's Spike or Bust. I think they're the only people right now that's in for wrestling. St. Clair is buying WGN, so I don't know what that could fold for TNA, because I haven't heard nothing about RH going on there. But if they got on Spike, where they used to be at, with Spike pumping money into the company, with Anthem also being a media company, I mean, in Fight Network, then you will see them, you know, getting out of the Impact Zone, being able to do more things where the fans are going to watch and tune in, because WWE right now is stale. So if TNA got on Spike and the shows were not taped 4 or 5 weeks in advance, and maybe down to 2 weeks where the people will actually tune in and not just, you know, troll the dirt sheets and stuff like that, then I think they can get back to where they was at in their heyday on Spike around 1.2, 1.3, 1.5. I can see them doing that easily.
And I hope they can. You mentioned campaigning for Rosemary. I'm happy because Rosemary actually stepped up and had said something back, which a lot of people don't do. And she had said, I refuse to conform. I am contract and Impact Wrestling. So glad you stepped up and did that. But you got a point. It's the YouTube numbers have gone up quite a bit. I've been looking at the numbers of subscribers they have on YouTube, and I mean, it wasn't too long ago that they had said, "Oh, we just hit 900,000." They're at like 20,000 or 30,000 more than that now. So the numbers are growing pretty rapidly. And I can't help but to think, you made a good point. Anthem is a media company, so when you go and have a TV meeting about, okay, we want to work with your network, it helps to bring people from Anthem with you, not Dixie Carter. You know, it's a complete but it's a complete different set of connections. So
yeah, definitely.
So we'll see. Let's talk Impact. So I watched this show this morning, and I watched it on my phone on a streaming site because I still don't have a cable in my new place, and I had been watching on Hulu, but my subscription ran out, and I didn't, my free trial, so to speak, and I didn't want to get the paid version because I was only watching Impact on it. But so I watched it this morning. I'd like this a lot more. Actually, before I even get into that, have you liked these India tapings? Have you been a fan?
I thought the first show was kind of bland, kind of, not to say weak, but I thought the first show was more of a we're here type show. I thought the last few shows got better. I didn't have a problem with the show last night. I didn't have a problem with the show last week. But I just thought they took it a little easy over there, you know, some of the matches. But, you know, you got to look at it. You know, these guys are going overseas. They're taping all these shows at one time. They're doing indie. So I just thought they sort of didn't step on the gas in India. I thought the India tour was mostly about, you know, completing that contract that they had that they never did when Dixie was in charge. So they had to fulfill that date to stay over there on the network. So I just thought that they sort of, you know, did what they could over there, but I don't think they stepped on the gas. I didn't have no problems with the second, third, fourth show. I just thought the first show was kind of soft. But, you know, I think they did a good job far as, you know, what they lacked far as the entertainment value of building up Slam 15. You know, they did a lot of promotion of the show on Impact. They did a lot of little videos and a lot of highlighting of the cards and things like that. So far as the production and what they added far as building the pay-per-view, I thought it was great. But I just thought they were not over the top with the action. I mean, it was good, but I just thought they sort of took their foot on the gas a little bit. And I don't know if that was because, you know, being over there or what. But I just thought they sort of took it down a notch over there.
There was a lot of pandering to the Indian audience in a way that I didn't think was totally necessary. I think it would have been okay if the tapings were in March or something like that. But when you're talking about leading up to Slammiversary, they had a lot of content that had nothing to do with the pay-per-view. So that was a little bit of my problem. We got a 2-minute match at one point between the knockouts. And we got several 3 or 4 minute matches. We got really quick matches. So I'm kind of ready for them to get back to the Impact Zone, even though, you know, maybe the crowd isn't going to be what it is in India, of course, but I'm kind of ready for them to get there because I thought they were putting on better television from there. But with that being said, I did see it a little bit. I saw it late because I watched it this morning. And I don't know if I was seeing a edited version of the show or not. So hopefully all my information is correct here. But so the show kicks off with the contract signings. And so did you watch this on Pop TV last night? Okay. I don't know if this was just the way I was watching it, you know, on my platform. Was it cutting between, because I know they said the contract signings happened earlier today. Was it cutting from like segment to segment? Okay. The way it looked on the platform I was watching on didn't look very smooth. Like it was just like all of a sudden it cut out and then someone else was in the ring. And I was like, I thought my phone was skipping. So, as weird as it kind of came off, I thought they did a good job because at first when I had heard they were going to do the contract signings of four matches, I think, I was like, oh my God, it's going to take up the entire show. They did a pretty good job here with making it pretty quick and painless. You know, it wasn't drawn out, you know, long promos or anything. Of course, a table got flipped and just what happens. But so what do you think about the opening segment? You know, do you feel like I do, where I said, you know, it was quick and effective. It wasn't drawn out. I mean, I thought they did a pretty good job in delivering it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I thought they did a good job. I think what we sort of look at Impact sometimes. I think we sort of not analyze it overly. But, you know, I look at it sometimes. I look at some things that, you know, is not done quick or it's too quick or, you know, like how did the wrestler get in the ring that quickly? He was just coming down the ramp. But, you know, I look at it and I say, they only got 2 hours. So they, you know, right. they making do with they, you know, they making do with what they got. And, you know, I thought that they executed it well. And if you look at, you know, a lot of the shows that they did over there, as far as, like I say, the production and how they put the shows together, I thought it was great by adding the stuff that they added in, the promos, the videos, just, you know, the outside stuff of India, you know, everything they did. I think everything they did, and especially the opening segment last night, I thought it was well executed.
This ended up setting up a tag team match for the rest of the evening, or for the main event of the evening. And I don't know about you. I cannot stand Bruce Pritchard's on-air character. I can't stand it. I really can't. I mean, it's almost like his verbiage is the same every time. You want to fight? He must have said, you want to fight? Let's fight. You're going to fight about 3 or 4 times in a row when he was trying to announce a main event. Oh, we're going to fight. And he's always yelling, you know? So I'm just like, shut up, dude. It's unfortunate Dutch is on a scooter, because I think he would be better served at this as this authority character. But so he put together the main event of the evening, which is... what was that?
The 8-man tag.
Okay. It was El Patron, James Storm, Eddie Edwards, and Shira versus Kong, Davey, Richards, EC3, and Lashley. So I thought the inclusion of Kongo Kong was really weird at first, and then they threw in Shira. And I guess they're justifying it because Kongo Kong randomly attacked them last week. When they threw Shira in there, I was like, oh, here we go. I was very concerned that he was going to take over the match, get the win, you know, on the go-home episode for the pay-per-view. Do you have any concerns that Shira – now, they were in India, so we get it. They're going to, you know, there's feel-good moments.
He's got to get over. He's got to get over India. So no problem.
But do you have any concerns that they're going to go back to the Impact Zone next week and he's going to go right back to jobbing? I mean, what did they do with him at this point? They made him look like Superman a couple times.
Well, I think what you got to do with him, I think you just got to keep him, you know, keep moving him up. Not, you know, not giving him a big push, but don't let him completely disappear. I think you can keep him strong. I mean, he's got good size. I mean, the guy's not a complete bum. He's not he's a greenhorn, but he's not that green now. He's got potential. It's just that they just going to have to put him in the right storyline, the right matchups where he can grow. You know, he's got to be in the ring with a guy that can work. I mean, like I say, he's kind of green. He doesn't have that many moves. But, you know, you look at a Ryback, you look at other guys his size that don't have a lot of moves. So as long as he can improve, have some charisma, which he has, I mean, the guy's not that bad. So, you know, you look at the WWE champions right now. I mean, this guy was a jobber. He was fired a couple years ago. Now he's world champion. So, I mean, anything's possible. So I just hope they just don't make him a comedy act when he comes back. I hope they continue to let him get some wins, you know, let him get a big win or two here and there, and just let's try to build him up and then see what happens next year. You know, I don't know if they're going to have the Bound for Glory series again, but, you know, when you have something meaningful, then start to have that push with the guy. And this India thing, I assume it's going to be a yearly thing now. So I think you got to keep him strong. I mean, you don't want to miss a boat on a guy because you think he's not 100% ready, because they've done it a lot in the past. So let him get some wins, you know, put him with someone like a stable, not a James Storm stable like he was at first, but let him get a rub with somebody where he can develop more and people can really look at him as legit, not just as a guy went home and the company pushed him because they was an Indian.
And wrestling these days, they get so caught up and there's this borderline. There's a very thin line, I should say, between serious and comedy in wrestling these days. I mean, like when KM was introduced, he was a serious character, and all of a sudden he's like toting that comedy line, and that that can really kill a guy. And I remember watching wrestling when I was growing up, and the WWF would have guys, you know, the Berserker, Damian Demento, and these guys, if you were to put them in today's wrestling landscape, they would be absolute comedy acts, you know. But they actually had a certain magic back then when it came to booking pro wrestling, that they did book these guys to look, regardless of their appearance, you know, Doink the Clown, another one, the first version of him. They had a way of delivering these guys as competitors, and right, without doing something silly with their character. It's almost like, okay, they look ridiculous, but when they get in the ring, it's business. And that's something that just wrestling right now is just not tapping into. I mean, you don't, the minute you start having a guy get in the ring and get people to laugh at him, and it's a killer. Like, and that's why they have a hard time getting so many gimmicks over right now. You know, everyone's coming in as a vanilla midget, so to speak, because that's what people relate to. But I don't know. I think it is possible to make him semi-serious of a competitor. You know, I think the Grado teaming with him hurt him a little bit last year. I think he's still trying to bounce back from that because he's not featured on TV enough to be taken serious. But, you know, get him in the right feud, something that makes sense. Even if he wants to do his little dance, whatever, as long as he hits that ring and he can find a way to be all business, I think we can start taking him seriously. You know, that I thought the commentary was really good on this show. Now, I don't want anyone to castrate me for saying this, but they actually reminded me a little bit this episode of Gorilla and Heenan. And I, not that I'm ever putting them on that level at all, because that's not what I'm saying, but I thought that the babyface heel dynamic was really good on this one, where Josh Matthews was just saying outlandish, ridiculous stuff, and then JB was kind of acknowledging him, but then going back to the calling the action. Like, if you cut out the bickering about their Slammiversary match, the dynamic they had, I actually thought was really good this episode. So again, I'm not comparing them to the Brain and Gorilla, but I'm just saying that's the kind of feel I got with the commentary this episode. So first match of the evening was Low-Ki and Trevor Lee versus Sanjay Dutt and Matt Sydal. So pretty good match. They're doing so much more with the X Division now than they previously were, and now we're getting them in a tag team format, and it was a good match. It had a lot of action. It really did. I really liked the double standing moonsault they did. So good stuff. Do you feel that Trevor Lee is in trouble when it comes to his booking with the company and his future with the company too? I mean, there's a lot of people just assuming he is not in the company's future anymore, their future plans, because of his relationship with some of the departed.
You know what? Oh, man. Well, you know, I thought Trevor Lee started over there with Jared over there in Global Force.
He did.
So I don't know. I think he's a guy that at the end of the day, he's got to stand on his own two feet. And I mean, you know, wrestling relationships do sort of get you buried, but it's all about how he takes it. Is he looking at it as they brought in a lot of talent? They're trying to see what they got. They're trying to build a division where it was only me and DJZ fighting for the title. You know, Eddie Edwards was the champion at one time. So if he look at it as maybe they're just trying to bring guys in, freshen up the division, and making it a deep division and not just centered around two people. If he looks at it that way, then he will be a good foot soldier. But if he look at it, or if he's listening to others by saying, you need to get out of there, they're burying you, we can get you in NXT, or we can get you on the main roster, i.e. Kevin Owens, you know, things like that. You know,
yeah.
So, you know, if that's the thing, then, you know, maybe his days are numbered. But I think the guy's talented. He's young. He's proven that he can go in the ring. I don't think Jeff is burying him. I just think that, you know, you got to look at it. Sanjay, they went over India. He was going to get the belt before they went to India, but because of the injury, he didn't. So I just think he's just in a transitional time right now where they got, you know, a lot of guys in this division. You know, they got Matt Sydal. They got Low-Ki. You know, they got Sanjay. You know, they got more guys now than they've had in a long time. And they got real X division wrestlers, guys that can go. So, you know, he's just gotta sit back and they're gonna tap him on the shoulder again. You know, I think the guy's a hell of a performer. And if they were to let him go because of his relationships, you know, the North Carolina mafia connection, then that's shame on them. But I don't think he's in trouble. He's not a guy that makes a lot of money. His salary is real friendly. So I don't see no reason just to let him go and to let him be another star somewhere else where Jared has learned in the past. He's seen the mistakes of Dixie and, you know, with TNA or Impact or Global Force or whatever we want to call it, made by letting guys go before they should. So I don't think they're going to let him go. I just think it's just right now they're in that transition time with talent, and he's just got to sit back and wait his time.
And you make a very good point. He was one of the early wrestlers with GFW. That's actually how he came over to Impact, because he was part of the GFW invasion storyline. It got that him and whatever Kurt Hawkins' name was had won the titles of the Wolves.
Right.
Maybe there is maybe Jarrett does have plans for him, but I mean, I made a point on one of the previous podcasts that there's been times where I've had drama with somebody, and whoever was stuck in the middle, if they weren't part of the solution, they just automatically became a part of the problem, whether they were causing problems or not. And sometimes you got to cut ties with that middle person if you want to separate yourself from the person you're having issues with. And I don't know, I can just see something like that happening. Wasn't Andrew ever part of GFW too?
I believe he was.
It's kind of hard because I know that in the early days of GFW, they had guys like Bobby Roode wrestling for him and, you know, guys who were Impact guys, but they were like crossing over. So yeah, I couldn't remember.
Young, James Storm.
Yeah. Right. So, but this was a good opening match. It was a fun match, and I think everybody knew Trevor Lee was going to eat the pin in this one. I mean, the minute you knew the match was happening, you knew exactly what the finish was most likely going to be. I thought they did a good job of advancing the storyline with Sanjay and Low Ki by having them brawl on the outside while Trevor and Seidel finish the match on the inside of the ring. The two guys that have nothing to do with the pay-per-view, they finish the match while we further the storyline, the other two outside of the ring. So it's always nice to see the shooting star press from Matt Seidel.
Yes, it is.
Always impressive. So they got some good time. They got 13, almost 14 minutes on this. So, you know, I think when they stick to the formula of the good bookends, which is the good opener and the good main event, I think it's usually their better shows. For me, this was my favorite show of the four. I like the flow and everything. I thought it was really funny between the matches before this next match. It showed Eli Drake and Chris Adonis walking the streets of Mumbai. It said they were training for their match, but they were just bothering the people.
Yes.
So it was pretty funny. The next one was the Mumbai Cats against Eli Drake and Chris Adonis. You know, this was an obvious squash match, but it was kind of funny that they included these two who had made some previous appearances on some of the early shows.
Yeah.
So it was a squash match. Chris Adonis is just not strong in the ring, in my opinion.
No.
I thought last year when they teamed Eli Drake with Jesse Godders, I thought that had a lot of money behind it. They pulled the plug on it very early. I do like when Eli Drake has someone, but I don't know. They randomly got rid of Tyrus, replaced him with Adonis. I would have rather have seen Magnus in this role. I think him and Drake would have been great together. But are you expecting much from this match at Slammiversary? They showed D'Angelo Williams. He did a standing moonsault. I don't know if you caught that in one of the clips there.
Yeah.
Are you expecting much of the match? Or?
We've seen this done a dozen of times. You know, guys crossing over from the NFL, getting one match. And, you know, I remember early years, Steve Mongo, Mac Michaels, you know, so, you know, we saw what he can do. So I don't expect much from the match. I assume Williams is going to get the pin in some type of fashion. I mean, you got to look at the match for what it is. You know, Adonis is not a good worker, and we got Williams in there, a new guy that's, you know, not a worker. So, you know, pretty much Moose and Drake is going to have to carry the load. And, you know, Williams is just going to come in, some drop kicks, some clotheslines, some arm drags. That's probably most we're going to get from him. And Moose is going to do the heavy lifting. I don't expect much from it. You know, the finish probably be good. Williams will get the pin. But other than that, it should be the opening match in the pay-per-view. And then so we can forget about it real quick.
Yeah, I hope it's one of the early matches. I'm looking forward to it because I want to see D'Angelo Williams. I like Moose and I like Eli Drake. But as I've personally stated, you know, I think Adonis is such a poor worker that I think he's going to hurt the match. And, you know, I don't think it's going to be one of the good matches on the card, but I think D'Angelo Williams will provide some highlights from it. So if you did you watch like the SummerSlam match years ago with Stephen Amell? I think it was SummerSlam. I don't know. I really don't watch much of the product anymore.
Oh, Arrow. Yes. Yeah.
Where the match overall wasn't really that good, but he was very impressive with what he did in the ring. And that kind of had people talking afterwards. And, you know, I think this will be something similar.
You know what? But you know, Chris Adonis, since you was mentioning him, something about him just seems like he just doesn't. It just seems like he's just not into it, or he's just so limited that it looks like he's not really interested. And it just seems like he's there, but for a guy that's been in the business this long, I mean, he hasn't improved. I mean, you look at Scott Steiner, you know, granted he was a collegiate wrestler, sort of the same size, and he developed, you know what I mean? I mean, he had the moves. I mean, like, this guy here is just basically a clothesline, a body slam, and lay on your opinion. I mean, that's all this guy is. I mean, I don't know why the fatuation of bringing him over, when, like you say, you had Tyrus there, a guy that had, you know, charisma, a guy had character. He's on Fox News. I mean, this is a guy that you want to keep, you know, to say, hey, we got a guy that's, you know, national as far as being on TV, and he's in our company, but we throw him aside for Chris Adonis? I don't understand it.
Right? Can you imagine the cross promotional juice they could have had here? If Tyrus was in this match and he was pumping it up on Fox, and you got you know, D'Angelo Williams on the other side. God. So, who knows what they were thinking there? The next match that we got was the Mumbai Street Fight, Swaggle versus Rockstar Spud. I was reading a review about this, and the review was absolutely hated this match. I personally, even though I wasn't looking forward to it in any way, shape, or form, I actually kind of enjoyed it. I actually thought there were some legit, you know, there were some legit parts when it came to wrestling and street and the using the weapons and everything. I thought it had its moments that were pretty good. I think the pulling the referee's pants down was a little much. I thought that Spud's pants coming down it fit the storyline, you know, and yeah. It shows that Spud is willing to do anything to entertain. I liked when he grabbed the microphone and, you know, started berating him and everything. So that was pretty good. What'd you think of this match? I can't say I found it funny necessarily, but I was kind of entertained by it.
That you hit it right there. It was an entertaining match. It was a good hardcore match, so to say. It ended their feud. They've been hyping this storyline up for a while, and it ended the way it should. I mean, Spud got his pants pulled down. They did the table spot. They threw lids, trash cans, powder at each other. I mean, it was entertaining. And from what I've been hearing, that Impact are going to start using the mini wrestlers again. So maybe this was a prelude to more to come of this. You know,
did you hear that?
I thought the match was entertaining for what it was.
Did you hear that? Really, that they're considering doing that?
Yes, I did. Here they're talking about bringing the guys back. I don't know what type of format, if that's just going to be for the house shows or dark matches or explosion, but they're talking about, you know, just going back using the mini wrestlers. Because as you remember, when TNA first started, they were using them. They did have a lot of, you know, minis on their roster. So I've been hearing that they're gonna, you know, start back up with it. don't know if it's just going to be a short-term thing, long-term thing, or it's just, you know, something, you know, something different to have, unlike the E.
So that's interesting. I used to be a bouncer a couple of years ago, and we had one night we hosted a micro championship wrestling, which was Hulk Hogan's. I guess he owns it. Mm-hmm. And I will say the place was very loud in there and very entertained by it. And I think because the guys were, there was some comedy to it, don't get me wrong, but the right. rest, the wrestlers were still taking the matches pretty serious. They were using real moves, you know, like they weren't one guy, you know, had done the RKO and all that, or the cutter, whatever you want to call it. So yeah. it was kind of taken seriously. So I guess if they go that direction, as long as they put on, as they take the matches seriously, if it's going under the referee's legs, right. biting him in the ass, you know what I mean? That's going right. to get over just like a fart in church.
Right.
Yeah. So,
yeah. Well, I think what they're trying to do here, I think they're trying to see what works. They're trying to be different. They're trying to evolve. And as you see now with the Mexican wrestlers coming in, the partnerships with, you know, Noah, the partnership, different partnerships with Mexico, they're trying to bring every audience that they can. So if it's, you know, bringing in the mini wrestlers, if it's, you know, bringing in more luchadors, if it's bringing in more Japanese talent, if it's, you know, bringing in foreign talent, you know, from different countries, they're trying to, you know, increase their visibility. They're trying to bring more eyeballs to the set. And it may not be Pop TV, but as you said earlier, YouTube hits. Maybe they're, you know, Jared is heavy on trying to get a streaming service. And they also still got Fight Network, and you can get that app and things like that. So I think they're just trying to have content that they can have. And if they do get on a bigger platform, then, okay, we got the minis now. We got knockouts tag titles. We got this, we got that. So I think they're just trying to build a platform to where they just don't have steak on the plate, but they got shrimp, they got lobster, they got potatoes, and they got bread, you know? So I think they're just trying to expand of more. If you have more, then when you go to the table to sit with these networks, okay, well, we got this, we got that. We can, you know, put this on Netflix or put this on Amazon or put this on Spike or put this on Pop. You know, I think they're trying to just have a little more options. And when you do that, you sort of open up your product to more people. And I think that's what Dixie lacked when she didn't have a lot of Mexican talent besides LAX. And they didn't have the Japanese talent besides a guy coming in for a cup of coffee and then he was gone in 3 months. So I think what they're trying to do is just add more on the plate to where they're getting more eyes, not just in the U.S., but internationally, South America, Mexico, and everywhere else in between.
You know, I listened to an interview with Jeff Jarrett about 2 years ago when he was promoting Global Force and, you know, teasing a TV deal and all that. And
Still waiting.
Yeah. So he was, you know, they had asked him, I don't remember what platform the interview was on, but they had asked how he planned on setting himself up apart from other wrestling shows and everything. And he had said the reason he called the company Global Force Wrestling was because that was going to be his niche, where it was going to be, he wanted competitors to come from Japan, to come from the UK, to come from Australia, from China, from wherever. Like, he wanted literally a global product, you know? So when he's doing all these partnerships, that's where he's going with it. Now, yes, you're going to say, well, the WWE has partners like that too. Like, yeah, they do. But I mean, they're all in their own category. They have the UK title and then the, you know, but they actually want the show to be basically like the partnership that ROH has with New Japan. They want that partnership, but they want it with several different countries and to come and do cross promotional stuff. And, you know, I think that's really cool. And I think the tag title match is going to be really, really good at the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
And I can't help but to think that the Crash promotion is kind of the odd man out in this whole thing, though. It seemed like they were really excited about that at first, because I think that was Noah was the first partnership. Then it was Crash, and then when AAA came aboard, it was like they don't mention Crash at all anymore.
Right.
But then again, Conan is Crash. He's there 24/7 with Impact. He's I say 24/7. He's on most of the shows. Garza and Laredo Kid are from crash. So, you know, I guess so, but... so Mumbai Street Fight, yeah. So next match we get is KM, Laurel Van Ness, Sienna versus Braxton Sutter, Ali, and Rosemary. So last week's knockout tag match was no bueno. I was hyped for it, and it was very bad. This match, even though it was double the time, but still only 4 minutes long. I actually thought it was pretty decent. I thought, you know, Sienna never got tagged into the match, but I thought from a storytelling standpoint, the match was pretty good. As far as, you know, some heat was still there between Rosemary and Sienna. They didn't really get to mix it up. And we got Allie hugging Rosemary is probably the highlight of this whole thing. But we're starting to get more action from Allie in the ring. One thing that the announcers do that drives me nuts, they obviously don't know the moves. And that kind of hurts the product a little bit.
Yeah.
So Allie hits what I think they call it the lung blower as far as the actual name for it. But he, you know, oh, a code breaker, which everyone knows Chris Jericho is the code breaker.
Yes.
And they've, you know, when what was their name? Marty Bell used to do the protect your neck, like they called that. Oh, the pedigree. I'm like, oh my God, you know, like it drives me crazy. But I thought there was a good sequence of moves there where, you know, Ali hit that and it ended up leading to the win. I thought the way that the LVN caught the mist was well done. Yes. It didn't come across too scripted.
No.
So I'm hoping she got some of that on the dress.
I think she did.
Yeah, that would be great. So, did this match do much for you? I mean, I even though it was 4 minutes long, I kind of liked it. I'm a big Braxton Sutter's my favorite wrestler, and Ali's my favorite knockout. So I mean, I guess I'm gonna like this match no matter what. But
yeah, I thought the match delivered. I mean, you know, everybody got involved. I thought the miss. You always want to see that miss from Rosemary, and you know, for Laura Van Ness to get it, that was good. I thought the interaction with Sienna and Rosemary was done right to where, because Sienna got the pin last week, so you don't want to have too much, you know, to where, you know, it's favoring, you know, a win for Sienna or a win of Rosemary at the pay-per-view. So you want to have that intrigue of them going in sort of fresh, even though the show was taped a month ago. But I thought everything was well done, the back-and-forth moves that they had. You know, I thought it delivered, and I think it keeps Rosemary strong. It gives her, you know, still her mystique of, you know, is she good, is she bad? The fans love her, so it delivered. The only thing I really don't like about the match is just KM. You know, like you said earlier, he came in as a monster, and now he's sort of just like a big oof. You know, so I think other than the KM, I thought everything was good. I think they're grooming Braxton Sutter for a big run, you know, down the road. I don't know if for the X Division title or what, but they sort of, you know, keeping him sort of in a favorite spot. And I don't know if that's because Ali is going to be the, you know, the big knockouts champion down the road, and she's going to run with the ball sooner or later. But, you know, I thought the match was good, and I thought the right team won, and it still kept Sienna strong, and we will see this big unification match on Sunday that we will see who is the best.
As I was watching Braxton Sutter, actually, before I make that point, who do you got between Sienna and Rosemary at the pay-per-view?
Rosemary.
Okay. I'm 60-40 on this because I had said in my prediction show, I think heels make a better champion when they're unifying titles. But if Gail Kim is handing the championship to the winner, I think that kind of gave away the ending.
Well, I don't think that takes away from Gail and Rosemary feud. I just think Rosemary, like I say, she's still got unfinished business with LAX, and she's still got business with Gail Kim. So I don't think that necessarily eliminates her from winning, because she always, Gail can hand her the belt and she can just blow mist in Gail's face. You know, so. And what's the better program? You know, hitting towards Bound for Glory would be the next pay-per-view, would be Gail and Rosemary. So I still will put it on Rosemary. And I think she's just so hot right now that even though Sienna's doing good work now that Maria's gone, you see that she's got character and personality. I think you just got to keep that belt on Rosemary to make the belt more prestigious and then just have her and Gail at Bound for Glory to, you know, settle it for it all.
So as I was watching Braxton Sutter, and as I said, I'm a big Braxton fan. I was thinking, man, they really need a good mid-card title. Yes. I personally do like the Impact Grand Championship, but Dutch. I'm just saying I don't hate it. I a lot of people hate it. I don't hate it. I'm entertained by the matches. But Dutch had actually said on Twitter, and I'm sure not a lot of people saw this, but they're working on changing the rules to make it to where it's still kind of got the format, but they're trying to adjust it at the same time to make it more enjoyable.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to see what they do, but I found it weird that they've never brought up the next gen title in this whole thing. And yes, that's supposed to be like the X Division championship for Global Force. And I was thinking, I was telling someone today, I said, well, I don't think we're ever going to hear them mention the title again, you know, because Cody holds it. I just assumed they were never going to mention it. Now that we know they're rebranding to Global Force Wrestling, I'm thinking that actually fits as a mid-card title because it almost sounds like it's, you know, the step before the world title.
Yes.
So kind of curious about that one. I could see that because the Grand Championship's cool and all, but it doesn't work as a mid-card title as far as, hey, you win this title and that's going to elevate you to world championship picture in the future. It doesn't, not under those rules, it doesn't work.
Yes, it doesn't work. I really thought once Billy was out the picture, I really thought they was just going to change the format altogether. I just thought it really don't make sense. I think you got to have the wrestlers for that. I think a lot of guys, they have been putting in the matches for far as the format of the three rounds, the submission, basically the MMA type thing. I just don't think it fits the competitors. I think if, you know, say if Josh Barnett comes in and challenge Moose, then that would be a good grand championship match. But I just think as far as the format and the talent that you have, it just doesn't work. I think if you're going to continue with that format, then you just need bigger guys that's just going to beat the hell out of each other for three rounds and see who get the decision. But I don't want to see a guy that's, you know, doing moonsaults or flying around a ring or a bigger guy against a smaller guy. I just think the format, if they're going to keep it with the three rounds, they got to change it to where it's exclusive, sort of like when the X Division, when they had a weight limit, even though it was no limits. But I think it's got to be sort of a limit and a certain style type fighter. You know, guys like Shearer size, Moose size, just the bigger guys for that type of format. Because I just don't think it plays well on TV. And whatever tweaks they can do with it, it could make it a lot better. It doesn't play well. And being in the impact zone, it really kills it because it's sort of a bland match if it's not exciting, if you got a Chris Adonis or, you know, Jesse Goddard or somebody like that.
Right. Do you hear that Eli Drake in the background?
I heard it.
But that was the in my pocket, the app went off by accident. It's funny when I'm walking around, whether it's work or whatever. And do you ever have like an app or something that accidentally goes off in your pocket? For whatever reason, my phone isn't locked the way it's supposed to a lot of the times, and that is always the one that comes up. And I'll just be walking, all of a sudden, Eli Drake. I'm like, oh my god.
Well, as long as they don't say dummy, then somebody may get offensive and think you messing with them.
True that. The main event was Kongo Kong, who was, again, the kind of random inclusion. But I think it was kind of cool to see him in the main event. They had to put someone in there that was going to eat the pins, you know, so they didn't have to do a DQ finish. But it was Kongo Kong, Davey Richards, EC3, Lashley versus Alberto, El Patron, James Storm, Eddie Edwards, and Shira. Bruce Pritchard was bothering me so much earlier because he was trying to pronounce Alberto El Patron with like an accent.
Yes.
He kept saying, El Patron, Alberto. Like, he just sounded so stupid trying to do it. I was like, oh my God, just say the name. I actually thought this main event was very good. Last week's main event, which I thought was okay, it was cool, which was Storm and Patron against EC3 and Lashley. I thought it was cool. It, you know, we got the DQ finish. I wasn't like jumping up in my seat about it, but this one I actually thought was very enjoyable because we got to see Davey Richards in a main event setting, which we have not seen at all. So we got to see him mix it up a little bit with like James Storm and Alberto and, you know, even Shearer to an extent, guys that we don't see him wrestle regularly. And just adding him into this match is what really broke it up for me, because the rest of these guys have all mixed it up in one way, shape, or form. Yeah. Adding him, I think, was a really nice dynamic. And then even Kongo Kong, you know, he kind of got himself over as a monster in this match. There was a pre-match beatdown of Mahabali Shira that I thought it was kind of ridiculous because it went on for so long. It was like, if these dudes are ready to come down to the ring, why did it take them so long? Now, Josh Matthews.
It was like the door was locked. It was like the door was locked in the back.
Yeah, someone locked it. They're like, ah. So, someone put a door up against the handle. You know? Josh Matthews made a good point where he said, why did he get in the ring? Has he never watched professional wrestling before? Which, that was a good. That shows how good Josh Matthews actually is. You know, people give him such a hard time, but the match, if that opening segment without him saying that, would have looked ridiculous. Yes. But by him doing that made it seem like it wasn't a problem in the booking. It was Shira being a dumbass. So Shira, of course, came back during this match. Why wouldn't he? Last week, he took the double stomp from Low-Ki, and it was enough to bandage his ribs. But this time, he took that same double stomp from Davey Richards with a chair over him and did not come back bandaged. So I was a little worried he was going to get the win in this.
Yes, me too.
I thought the ending of the match was good, though. Let me not say that. I think the double stomp that El Patron does is the worst move in wrestling. Do you like that move?
Awful. That double stomp is awful. Awful.
I think it would work if he did it quicker instead of pandering to the audience.
Yeah.
There was this one that he did in WWE one time that I like to look at it on YouTube sometimes because it cracks me up so much. It was a League of Nations. So that was his team. They were going against like the Lucha Dragons and someone else. I don't know. So Sin Cara was caught up in the ropes. So not in the turnbuckle like he normally does it. He was like between turnbuckles and the ropes. And he was just hanging there in the ropes for what felt like an eternity because Alberto climbed to the top rope and he was pandering to the audience for what felt like a minute. Like he just kept doing the whistle thing with the, and he wasn't jumping. And I was like, oh my God. And it looked so ridiculous because Sin Cara was hanging on the rope for like the longest time. And it's like, just let go. There's no reason for you to be holding onto the rope.
Yes.
I don't know. Someone find, if you're looking for a good laugh, look that up on YouTube. It was absolutely terrible. I don't like the move at all. I don't like Kongo taking the pin necessarily, but it made sense because it wasn't like he just one-on-one took it. I mean, they double teamed them and got the win. Someone had to take the pin, and we didn't want to get a DQ again, but your thoughts on the main event, though? You know, again, Shearer came as a hero, but he didn't necessarily win the match. He did get the feel-good moment with the body slam of Kongo Kong.
Yeah, I thought the main event was good. I mean, I thought this probably was the best main event they had over here so far. By having the, you know, three guys that are facing each other at Slam 15 in the same match, you know, you got the interaction with all three of those competitors that's facing each other. And, you know, the match was strong. You know, normally, you know, you used to watch Impact, you'll see them have 8-man or 6-man tag team matches, and it's just everybody in the ring just brawling. But this one was actually a match. You know, it got everything across as far as who's facing each other, the Wolves and their rivalry, the title unification, and James Storm and EC3 with the strap match. So they accomplished everything they needed to as far as, you know, in this match. Had no problem with the finish. You knew Shearer was going to be the hero somewhat. You know, he didn't get the pin, but he got the big hero return save, sort of Willis Reed 1970 something in the garden coming to the ring. So, I mean, it, you know, I thought the match was good. You know, for a go home match, final match for the pay per view, I thought it delivered. And this right here, it sort of this is something that they really didn't do with the Dixie era, where they brought it all together and they brought it home in this last show. Now, the other three shows wasn't great, but I thought they sealed the deal with the pay-per-view with this show. So I thought it was a good main event. And, you know, for what it was, the finish, you know, we don't like the double stomp from Alberto El Padron, but it accomplished what it needed to do. And it doesn't hurt Kong because they got future plans for Kong. I mean, you can see a guy that weighs four bills can jump, do a frog splash halfway across the ring. That pin doesn't hurt him at all.
Right. I was saying last week on the podcast when Rosemary took the pin, taking a pin in a tag team match is not the same as taking one one-on-one. I know it still bothers people, but there's a difference when your team loses compared to you losing. Even if you're the one taking the pin, you're not necessarily responsible for taking that pin because you have other guys that got your back who are actually failing you, but, you know, if you look at it that way. So, you know, I don't think it's something where they're going to write Congo Kong off as a monster now, because like Fall Out Bob, for instance, that guy has been taking off his feet more than Rockstar Spud has. That guy, every time he gets in a ring with anybody, he's a comedy character, and they have killed any chance that dude has of being a monster. Like, I think Congo Kong still has that ability. So did you think that this was poor timing to do these shows in India before the pay-per-view, because you're missing Alicia Edwards, you're missing Angelina Love, you're missing Scott Steiner, D'Angelo Williams, guys who would have been, it would have been best served to have them on TV a little bit?
Yeah. I think it was bad timing, but, you know, you know, sometimes you just got to do what you got to do. And I thought they made up for it with, you know, with all the videos and the promotion they did for the show. So I don't think it hurts it that much, because we all know Impact is taped weeks in advance. So, you know, all the videos they added with D'Angelo training, the announcement, the clips from ESPN and things like that. So I really don't think it really hurt. And also, you got to look at it also. This is going to be a huge card. They got a lot going on. And when you add this person and this person, as we always say, they only got 2 hours. For what it was, I still think they, you know, I think they delivered as far as, you know, getting the message out, you know, through the D'Angelo Williams announcement, you know, carnalizing the Wolf feud, the Lashley and El Patron feud. So even though it was bad timing, but also, it also enabled them to get on a different stage than being in the Impact Zone. So it may has its faults, but at the end of the day, it made them look like a major league product going into a pay-per-view coming from off the road than, say, being at the Impact Zone for these tapings and then right back to a pay-per-view. So it's beneficial in a way where it sort of gives the wrestlers like a homecoming because they haven't been there in, say, 2 months. So you have his drawbacks, but you also have his positives with it. But as far as, you know, building up, I still think they achieved what they needed to over India and with the production and the packages that they did. So I think overall it really didn't hurt too much.
I hope that this does fire up the Impact Zone crowd a little bit, because I was in the show last year, the very first show in the Impact Zone of 2016. And it was after Pennsylvania. It was after the UK. So it was, you know, like a quarter of the way through the year. And that was the episode where Galloway won the world title. And even though I was VIP, I got there very late, so I had to sit in the stands. And I remember thinking, it's loud as shit in here. It was, one of my kids, my four-year-old, was really pissed because he's sensitive with his ears. And I remember thinking, wow, there's a lot of energy in here, and probably an energy that I haven't seen a whole lot since then watching the product. But for that particular set of tapings, there was a lot of energy. And I think that being away a little bit did do some good for that crowd. You know, when you get the same product every single week, there's going to be complacency. I mean, every single week, every single month, or every 6 weeks, there's going to be complacency. And I don't want to give the Impact Zone crowd such a hard time like people do, because I've been a part of it. And as a matter of fact, my guest host next week is there all the time. So we're going to talk about what it's really like in there instead of what you see on TV. But so, good episode. I think we're kind of in agreement. This was one of the better episodes that they did while they were over there. And I thought it was a pretty decent go-home episode given what they had to work with. And they've done a very good job hyping this pay-per-view up on social media, giving some kind of new announcement every single day. And let's hope this Global Force announcement is not a... People are pretty pissed off, but let's just hope, you know, that this is a start of moving forward in a positive direction. And, you know, that's what happens when you don't support the product the way you need to. It's going to get rebranded, and they're going to move forward in a new direction. So still the same company that we've grown to love. So, but I think that's going to do it for us this week. Much thanks, much love to Terrence for swinging by. Definitely will have him again. So on the YouTube comments or on Twitter, let me know what you guys thought of Terrence coming on this week. And
bring him back. Bring him back.
I think it's safe to say. I think it's very safe to say. So that's going to do it for us this week. King of the Mountain Podcast signing off. Talk to you guys soon. Peace. All right.